fighting words in many arenas. And I go back to my analogy of the traffic analogy. Is turbidity the right standard? Does it mean anything? What is 25? Is it a good number? These are questions that have been asked over and over, and all of a sudden, after 12 years of complete inertia, complete inactivity by any phase of government that I know, all of a sudden, the number of agencies that are doing turbidity studies has mushroomed and skyrocketed. Almost everybody's doing a turbidity study. We're planning to review everything that everybody else is doing and make some proposals. But the question is turbidity the right thing to be thinking about? Is it the right measure of light penetration? Is light penetration important? Is 25 the right number? All these are good questions, and there hasn't been a review of the research in a dozen years. So that's a flurry of activity. Again, outside contractor, credibility, draft RFP in your possession. That is a review of what we're doing with our, what I still like to think of as 407 money. I like to think that 407 is alive, even though it didn't pass the House. I would like to say, in anticipation of your question, Senator, yes, we are preparing our budget such that these kind of things go on. We do not have a number assigned to how many dollars we want to spend on this kind of study next year or the year after. We are working on those numbers. As you know, whenever you do increments or whenever you add little projects to your budget, you have to select priorities, and we might have 12 requests for additional money like this one, and how this thing ranks among those 12 is being worked on. It hasn't been finished yet, as you probably know. And where that ends up, I, as a technical person, don't know, but I feel it'll be very high. I think this is very important to the administration, and my boss, who does make decisions like that, eventually, when he gets all the material for him, and his bosses will answer that, and I can't do it at this time.
Randy, did you do, I'm sure you did, sampling outside of the district and inside the district? And
yes.
As well as carrying on this?
Yes.
Did you do any, I scoot around a part of the country myself, but did you do any of the sampling on the Tolovana, that area?
Please, get the overlay for that. Yeah, we have... We like fishing game. Concentrated as much as we could our efforts in the area of study, that is this central area right here. But yes, we have two or three other areas of interest, sort of like fishing game. We also looked around the Tolovana area. We visited our friends up there. And we have a little deal like so for this area and around the Chattanooga. So we visited three areas, plus Doug, in June, went into the Peters Creek area and McGrath and places like that.
T9.
Right. So yes, we have studied in this year and in previous years other areas, but let me reemphasize, because of what's going on here, we've doubled and tripled our efforts and redirected our efforts toward the area of study. For example, this is our similar graph for, what do you think that we're going? Well, anyhow, this is our similar map that matches theirs, and we're in the process of trying to make a slide that looked exactly like theirs. But again, this is fast work getting all this stuff ready. This season really is still going on. So anyhow, this gives you an idea. Yes, we have several areas of study.
Well, in all those studies you made, you did them upstream, downstream, et cetera. Did you find miners that were meeting our turbidity standard?
Ron Kreisenbeck would be better to answer that, and I'll explain why. As we said earlier, we did not go in upstream of a mine. We did not intentionally go in and around mine sites. We went downstream of a bunch of miners and sort of got, as you say, the cumulative effects. Now, to answer your question about whether a miner met the water quality standards, you'd need to go in between and check everything like that. I would guess three, six miners that EPA, DEC checked all year might have met the 25 turbidity limit, which, as you know, is the fish standard and not the drinking water standard. But
how many would you guess met the 5?
Well, you do ask questions, don't you? We have none that I know of that meet the 5.
Sorry to do that to you, but
that's okay.
Did any of the other agencies find, how many did any of the other agencies find meeting the 5?
We had a group on the Tuluxack River, and one of the big operations up there, dredging operations, by the way, I'm a little long again, was the very clear water coming out. I'm not sure if, well, they took samples, so we have the data. I don't remember the data, but I would guess that those waters were clear enough to meet most standards.
If you do find that they did meet that, would you please let me know? I mean, specifically, rather
sure.
than I think it was clear water.
And, why they're meeting it, what they're
yeah.
doing.
And why they're, how they're able to do that. Randy, do you see this as bringing us closer to knowing? Now, we're going to be getting to EPA here in a minute. We've been talking about basin studies. Have you had indication that we might be able to go into a basin planning concept and be approved by EPA?
I'm glad you asked that, and be approved by. We can go into a basin planning thing and we can do a bang-up job, but it has to be something that means something to EPA. If it doesn't change the things that come out of Seattle, if it doesn't change the things that come out of DEC, then we're wasting our time. And that's the whole nuts of the agreement. We've got to get with EPA. They've got to give us a target, something to aim for. They got to tell us how to get there. And so far as the things like that, how to get there, what to do, we've been getting pretty good cooperation from them. The big question is, if we do all of this, if we decide what standards should be, if we decide what's the fastest way of getting there with our manning practices, We just have to end up with a result that makes a difference in their permits. And I think we can do it.
You said something a while ago that I'm going to pin you on a little bit. You said that we really hadn't done any review and are studying for 12 years. And as I understand the Clean Water Act, it says that your standards will be reviewed every 3 years. And then none of the state departments have been doing this. Is this correct, agencies?
Oh, you can get two answers for that one.
Well, I usually do.
Right.
Or none at all.
The one answer is, yes, we are continually reviewing the water quality standards, which is a number of things. Some things do with mixing zones, some things have to do with zones of deposit, some things have to do with the actual numbers, like 25 and 5. And the Clean Water Act says every 3 years you must do a review of the water quality standards. And that's the triennial review, and that's the one that we have one coming up in this December, as a matter of fact. And we are opening the water quality standards open for comments again. But from that point of view, you see, we actually do that about once a year anyhow. We have so many changes to the water quality standards in terms of procedures and new information and so forth. In the time that I've been there, we must have had 5 or 6 sort of reviews of the water quality standards. So it really, what EPA says is a review of the water quality standards and what is a comprehensive look at turbidity are two different things. And we have not done a comprehensive look at that number. We have reviewed the water quality standards. There's two different answers.
Let me pin you down real good, Randy. If you had to make the kind of decisions that then you're going to have to make, and particularly legislators may have to make, would you support legislation attempting to correct some of our problems, or would you support changing standards, or would you support changing regs, or would you support closing mines? How do you see us, what do you see as our option?
That was another one of your questions you had in your letter, and I see, as a result of this two-year study, I see certain recommendations that might change our regulations. I see recommendations for changing state law. I see recommendations coming for changing the Clean Water Act as a product of this. And insofar as those are intelligent changes, insofar as those are well thought out changes documented on the studies we do here, they'll fly. But if they don't have scientific backing, if they don't have this kind of stuff going on like we're seeing right now, these reports and this kind of stuff, without scientific backing, they don't have a chance of surviving the lawmaking process or surviving the regulation-making process. Yes, is the answer.
Questions, anyone?
I had one other thing on my list. Excuse me, Senator.
No time.
You had one other question on the list of things that you wanted, and that was the status of the mining grants. Do you want to do that right now, or do you want to finish up the water quality?
Let me change my mind on that. Let's get the EPA, because it's essential.
I think that's
that
a good
we're
idea.
Talking to someone at the least. Then we'll get on to the grants and questions on grants and be a part of that. Thank you, Rick.
Ron Kreisenbeck, Alaska Operations Mogul.
My name is Ron Kreisenbeck, and I'm director of the Alaska Operations Office for EPA. And I have some prepared remarks here, and they say good morning, which is highly inappropriate right now. I hope that's the only inappropriate thing I have to say to you. Senator Fahrenkamp has asked me to explain what EPA has been up to this year, and that seems to be a question for everyone every time I'm before any group. What are you guys up to? And secondly, I hope to explain to you use attainability analyses, and I hope that will answer Senator Strzelczewski's question about how's all this stuff fit together. So first, what are we up to? We issued 447 MPDES permits this year, and we have another 100 applications before us right now, and we hope to get those issued before December. That's easy to say, but we went through a long process. We got lots of public input. We got lots of input from the mining industry, and that was a monumental task. There were lots of hearings, lots of workshops, and I think it's fair to say that the end result of that was upbeat. I think EPA learned a lot, and I think the mining community learned a lot. And for the first time, Region 10 established a liaison office here in Fairbanks to work with the mining industry, and that's Bub Loisel, who's seated right here. He spent all summer here working with the mining industry, and in all of our views, I think that was a success, made successful by the folks like yourself and the mining community who worked with him, and it gave us a focal point here for the cooperation that we have from the other state and federal agencies. In addition, we sent two field teams with Bub's coordination into to the field. The first was a compliance team, and compliance is another word for an enforcement team. We went out to look at how well our permits were being complied with. The compliance team performed 46 sampling inspections, and 9 which were non-sampling because facilities weren't operating. In addition, we sent out a trend analysis team, and that was to look at gathering data on mining facilities with good operating ponds to answer some of the very good questions that were brought up by the miners themselves at the hearings, getting some information over several days on pond depth, retention times, and things like that. We sampled 7 mines for 3 to 4 days each. And these mines were 2 in the Live and Good area, 1 in the Central area, 2 outside Fox off the Steese Highway, and 2 in the Fairbanks Creek area. The trend analysis team collected samples for soluble solids, total suspended solids, arsenic, and turbidity over a 3 to 4 day period at the seven mines. And although we don't have all of the data together, I think preliminary, I can say that both teams found that sellable solids effluent limitations were, in the majority of the cases, being met. Turbidity, on the other hand, was not being met. And you asked for some specific information on turbidity where it was in compliance, and we do have a couple of instances of that, and when I get the data, we'll provide it to you. I think both teams received a lot of cooperation from the miners themselves. I think that one thing that we have gained this year is that everyone understands what has to be done under the Clean Water Act and are working hard to make sure that they can comply. As soon as all of the data that we've gathered is fully analyzed, and we have to realize that that we just completed these studies about a month ago, we'll have the data out to you. In addition, the National Effluent Guidelines Division, which develops the guidelines under the Clean Water Act, which are used for permitting, visited 10 mines. And to date, they have produced this preliminary draft report, and this report is a report from the contractor to EPA. It hasn't been reviewed by EPA extensively yet. What they did was look at the, essentially the same thing that the EPA Region 10 mine team did, and they also looked at the use of flocculants, similar to what you saw in the Canadian mining study. I will provide you with members of the committee with a copy of this. As you might expect, it's full of disclaimers, and we're hoping to remove those, but at the moment you can look at the raw data and you can get an idea of what they did. Now let me briefly describe the purpose and scope of use attainability analysis, and that's a big word for bringing together all the studies that you heard about this morning, and it's the framework that I think this committee and their action in funding these studies was looking at from our meetings last fall about this time, when we said that the only way to reclassify a stream or to make any changes in the uses is to go through a use attainability analysis. The basic purpose of use attainability analysis is to determine whether or not the goal of the Clean Water Act, which is protection and propagation of fish, shellfish, and wildlife, and recreation in and on the water, is achievable on a given stream. They are also required to demonstrate that other stream uses designated for the stream, but not required by the Act, are actually attainable on the stream. And you can see that drinking water isn't a goal of the Clean Water Act per se, but it certainly is a goal of the Safe Drinking Water Act, and that applies here. Federal regulations list six reasons why the Clean Water Act goal or designated uses may not be attainable on a stream. These are naturally occurring pollutants, insufficient flow, human-caused conditions, hydrologic modifications, and hydrologic modifications is a fancy word for dams, physical conditions on the stream, and attainment of the use would cause substantial and widespread economic and social impacts. And I think number six is the one that we have talked about at length with the mining industry. This regulation requires a use attainability analysis to be conducted wherever designated uses are to be removed from a stream or the Clean Water Act goals are not to be designated for the stream. The analysis is to document that the designated uses or the goal are not attainable on the stream for one or more of the six reasons cited. The scope of these analyses can vary substantially depending on the complexity of the stream or the stream system and the factors apparently precluding attainment of the Clean Water Act goal or other designated uses. However, the scope must be sufficient to accomplish the following: determine existing stream uses, including biological uses such as fish spawning or migration routes. Two, determine the factors precluding attainment of the Clean Water Act goal or other designated uses. And three, determine the uses that are attainable. And how to do all of this, and all of the work that's been done here, is in an EPA handbook. describing exactly what steps have to be gone through. And I had some written concluding remarks here, which were kind of flowery, but talking about cooperation and where we're headed and urging us to move on, and maybe they're still appropriate. I'm encouraged, and I'm even more encouraged after hearing the reports from the various agencies that are gathering this data, that we are headed on the right track on whether we will get the information. And I say we, sitting here as a federality, but speaking as an Alaskan, will have the information to make a rational judgment about whether or not we have done the right thing in setting a water quality standard. Thank you.
Are there questions, comments, members of the committee? Did you? Go ahead,
Madam Chair. Ron, I wonder, are the studies that are being done, does the possibility exist that that can lead to actual reclassification of any of the streams under consideration? Or do you see this more as a test kind of process that could lead to developing standards that in turn might have to go through a long federal review process before there was a determination if they were adequate? Will this actually result in possibly reclassifying from that drinking water standard the streams under consideration in the Central Basin?
I think if it can be demonstrated through this, and I would be presupposing what the conclusion of some of these studies are, but I think some of this information certainly could result in reclassifying from a drinking water standard. And one example that sticks in the back of my mind is the arsenic standard. And I know we had several instances in our own permit hearings where miners came up and they had extremely high arsenic. And it's naturally occurring. Where you find gold, you find arsenic. Therefore, a drinking water standard may not be appropriate for that stream. And in the initial classification, all streams, as you know, were made drinking water. I think there are some cases like that where it would be, EPA would be able to approve those fairly readily. The other more thorny issues like turbidity and uses in a whole basin like we're looking at here is going to take a while, and I would be lying to you to tell you otherwise.
Madam Chair, just one other question now. Turbidity seems to be the thing that's the real problem out
there.
That's
correct.
And I wonder, what's the kind of posture of EPA during the time? This is a two-year study, and it's going to take some time to develop things out of it. What is your posture on turbidity? To let those things go ahead pretty much as we are in terms of enforcement of the existing law?
Well, we haven't tried to enforce on the turbidity standard per se. Our enforcement policy has been not to enforce on that because to date we have had enough problems with people not putting in settling ponds and not even getting the settleable solids out. I think it's fair to say that as time goes on and as our BAT permits are developed, that we will be forced to use to look at turbidity. I mean, it's a standard. When the state adopts a turbidity standard, it becomes a federal standard.
I think I like the way you said that, when the state it becomes. I hope it hasn't become already, because it looks like we're looking at some very strong problems with trying to make drinking water streams out of streams that aren't drinking water. In some instances. For instance, I'd eat like heck to have to drink the Tylenol. Imagine the wood, it doesn't hurt. Or Copper River, or some of the rest of them. Or some of the streams, the one up by the Red Dog. Imagine if you drank that, you'd be pretty sick for a long time. And there's no mining going on there at all. It's natural, as it is in a lot of areas. Are there other questions from members of the committee? Dan, since we have... We appreciate, Ron, you being here very, very much, and we appreciate the fact that we do have someone from EPA as an Alaska representative up here working with us, and it makes it much more easy to find a cooperative sense in having EPA here and in that way. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit, while we have a little time, about the grants program, and just if you'll speak up from your seats, agencies, or you can come up together, whatever. But where we are on that, I think it's important for those people who are not familiar with what's happening or what's not happening and why. Randy, are you prepared to carry that?
Right, I think Kendra wanted me to do that.
Madam Chair? May I ask just one question that relates
sure.
to what we're into before we get into this? And I'm
please
not
do.
Quite sure who to direct that question to. It may be Dick Nevay or DNR, possibly DNR. The various management plans that are being done, such as the Matanuska-Susitna management plan, uses a lot, or could use, I would think, in developing the plans. A lot of the information is being developed for this placer mining thing. And I guess I'd like to know, is there a relationship between the placer mining study that's being done and the various land management plans that are underway? Maybe Ned Farquhar is here.
Thank you, Senator. Ned Farquhar from the department. I'm not sure how we're using that information. Pedro, do you?
We really haven't tied it all together that close yet, Senator, but we know that we'll be using the same information, and that much we know that we'll do. We believe that if we get into a basin planning type approach, that it logically fits into these type of comprehensive land plans. And so, but we're not quite sure how to tie that in with what else we might do at this point.
Madam Chair, my only comment is it's so obviously a logical part of it and part of that economic development of an area, but there are other land uses there, and I think you'd be missing a great deal because we're doing this, that to keep that so narrow that it's not going to be fit in and start to store it for that those other plans. And you know, maybe that can be done on a random basis, but I would be hoping somebody's thinking about the broader plan.
Absolutely. It needs
yeah.
to fit into the broader plans. We don't have any question about that. What we also want to look at is whether we can tie it in through a part of the regulatory procedural type process, and we haven't got to that point yet.
Fine, thank you. I think we can debate that.
Dick?
I'd like to respond to Senator Strzelowski's question. Part one, getting this thing going, we have not addressed the use of this with anything else, but have initiated in the Department of Great Concern about land use. Problems like in the Wasilla area, Homer, the buyer beware philosophy, turn land loose, and it turns out that the land is unusable. It's unusable in terms of track development and water sewage problems that we're finding. I'm hearing reports that there may be similar concerns, even in the metropolitan area of Anchorage. These are things. If you take a look at the state of Alaska, the wetlands not available for use. The glacial areas are not available. A lot of the mountainous regions are inaccessible. And the amount of land available to community development or individual homestead turns out to be pretty minimal. And I have some people who started to take a look at this, see if we can't come up with generate some numbers to indicate just how much land is available. We have so many acres from the Fed that are being slowly turned over. Unknown there, what is usable and for what purpose. But we've started to address this very question, and our concern stems in from those who are going to be divided or trapped with development are becoming a major concern to us. So these kinds of studies do have to integrate dovetail and ultimately address the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there further questions? Commissioner, while you're up, there's a couple things that came to mind while Ron was talking. One was he was talking about their enforcement efforts, and we, of course, have heard nothing concerning ours this year. Maybe if we have a little time, we can get into some of that. Another thing was that Ron made the statement that state standards tend to become federal standards under the permitting system. So I guess from you and from Commissioner Collinsworth or Clark, Mr. Clark, his representative, and from DNR, I'd like to know, do you feel that miners can economically meet our state standard for turbidity? piece of equipment. That's the cost of putting it in.
Technology does advance. Hopefully, there may be something else under the wings, which is the very purpose of the grant program, to look at recycling and recovery, which will go to the water quality purpose of what we're addressing. So, I think we have to look at this optimistically. Hopefully, this is going to answer your question. This study should do that. And the grant program, combination, is a multi-pronged attack on the issues.
Well, Commissioner, if our studies show that, you know, our attainability studies, et cetera, show that indeed what some of us suspect very strongly, which is that it, in most instances it's not economically possible, would you then suggest or support legislative change, regulatory change, attempt to change the standard, or attempt to close the mine? Seems to me the three, four, five options.
Well, I think we have a starting point. Ron Freisman addressed this. The blanket categorization of very stream to stream water quality, obviously, is erroneous. If there's already arsenic in the stream, that would be illogical. Those would be logical streams to remove. They're not anymore. They're poisonous. Nobody's got to live with arsenic. It's no animal. There's a starting point, so that takes one. Now, through this process, the amazing thing is that the year 1984, we finally started to accumulate data to make this judgment. This is very interesting indeed, but it's taken so long to address and provide the data upon which to establish drinking water standards, et cetera. And we've gone with regulations. This is a difficult way to go about life, is to put a rule in thou shalt not.
I guess I'm feeling a little sorry for Mom. And then I think so many times in our press and in our comments, we seem to want to lay, hey, all of our problems are because of EPA. You know, they're forcing us to do all this stuff. When in reality, all of our problems do not come from EPA, but from our own standards or from 12 years of doing nothing. Which is just about what we've done, about looking at the classification of our streams, where is the arsenic, this kind of thing. So I guess in a way, Ron, I'm trying to apologize a bit for some of all the blame EPA gets for some of our laziness. And I think it's gotten us in trouble on the part of EPA. Not you, Commissioner. You weren't here, so.
Well,
but it's your department, and you're going to get blamed with it. We have to carry, I think, our share of that blame. And I guess what all of us have been interested in this year and last year is, you know, we're trying to help you and the other agencies get the information we need to make some kind of informed decisions, not this blanket all drinking water junk that we've done before and then do nothing about it. But I guess we're just hoping against hope that this material will result in something that will be concrete and not another spinning wheel.
We're doing something that I think is useful. My agency did a seeking process bring all the people who are participants, the extremes, the moderates, or whatever, sit at the round table and let's work it out together. We've done this with the classroom.
Fisheries on that. You know, as we go through this, now we're beginning to get, I think all of us know, we've got to somewhere tie the miner, the environmentalists, the fisheries, the economic people together. And we don't have anybody from commercial fishing in there, do we? Maybe just a suggestion that we could. Dick, go John and Bruce. Thank you very much. Are there questions? Other questions? Please. I guess I'd like to pursue what I'm doing with you, Pedro. I hit you once before on it, and I'd like to hit. Let's go to Clark, I guess, first, and ask him if he thinks that miners can economically meet those drinking water standards. Where are you, Mr. Clark? There you are.
I'd actually have to defer that question to the other agencies. That's not within the expertise that we have to look at. I did point out that two people have already said that in some cases it is, in some cases it isn't, and I think that's a very logical answer. I mean, very realistic from what we've seen, but also an important point is that it's synergistic in the sense, if that's the right word, that maybe in some cases you can capitalize better technologies to recover coal better, more efficiently, and turn it back into a profit, which can make it more. I really don't have the expertise, but I would love to.
What do you plan on doing now? Where do you go from here with your data? Are you planning on using that and developing the work from that in-house? Do you plan on joining with the other agencies for an independent outsider or somebody else to pull together the data? What are your plans?
At this point in time, we don't have the intention of contracting to anybody. At least we haven't discussed that yet. We intend to go immediately into work on the relevant aspects of basin planning after we've looked at more detailed data we've got. We'll be working with the other agencies in that regard. We want to get a better picture of what the situation is. We have the data to do it in many regards, and that's what we'll be looking at. Like I said, many of the studies, I think, will be finalized in the spring, and so we'll be on two paths doing that and working on what is a plan, what is basic plan, what are our options, and we'll work.
I think those options are very, drawing out what those options are very important.
We've thrown out a few in the talk that I gave, but those are very obvious. Best mining practices is, again, it's not a new concept. That's been around for a long time, too. So it's, you know, there are certain obvious practices that we can look to now, but we think there maybe some other things, and that's what everybody thinks going into this process, some other things that can be done to have it involved in this work.
I guess I'm detecting a bit of, you know, today it seems to me that the picture's been pretty well planted. Is everything is rosy and all the agencies are getting along together, and all those agencies together are getting along with the miners, and that's not what I find when I'm out in, you know, in the creeks. And I guess this is bothering me, so I want to make sure that there's credibility to whatever comes out. So maybe all of you can discuss it together. Commissioner?
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say, Senator, is that the data is certainly hot.
Oh, yeah.
The charts put together yesterday, and we haven't really had that time to sit down collectively and see what's, do we need to modify this summer's approach in preparation for next summer, let alone come to some significant policy statements.
Did I push you just a little bit?
A bit.
Mm.
But that's all right.
My apologies, sir.
Yeah,
I'm not used to being pushy at all. I got my fingers crossed.
We're committed to addressing that, but there's no point in making a foolish statement today and find out next week when we're going to the data that we should have said meeting when we said hey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even being evasive. You're hopefully collectively we'll come up with some worthwhile suggestions today. And so the rosy picture is true. We are working to arrive at that point where we can make a decision.
Well, I think the rosy picture is there in that we are all attempting to work together to solve these major problems. I've stated that, but I think there's still a great deal of frustration out on the creeks. And lack of understanding of some of their problems by us and lack of understanding of some of our problems by them. You see what I'm saying? On both sides. Thank you much.
I just have a question. Are these same type of studies going to be take place, for example, up in the Nome area where there are some flashing lights? Or are we just concentrating on this particular area for Alaska?
Well, Randy, other people can probably do it better than I. But in terms of the amount of money that we have and getting people together, and earlier in the presentation, it shows an area that's easily accessible. Agencies working together, and you know, to cover the whole state is financially impossible. So we're starting here. You know, those areas may have to be addressed, and we may ultimately have to assess the whole state over a phase-in program, which is a suggestion made to the one early task force meeting by Randy Bayless. That here's the whole.
Where we say we can go ahead and do this placer mining here in the Fairbanks area, but we're going to close Nome down because we haven't had a study in that area. That would be a very tough position for us to be in.
Madam Chair,
Senator Sturzelewski.
Could you, in terms of the total amount of mining activity, just give a rough percentage, someone, of what is contained in the area under study of the total mining activity in the state? Anybody have a rough idea?
You know, did you understand the question? What's the percentage of the total mining area that's been covered by the study?
No, the total economic activity generated by mining. What percentage is?
That, in terms of percentage of the gross economic impact of mining, represents 25% of the total.
How much of the 70 million dollars is generated by this area of placer mining?
Well, the Central District is by far the largest.
Okay.
I wouldn't have that figure at my fingertips, but possibly somewhere between 30% and 40% from the Central District.
Pedro, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I'd like to point out that I certainly don't see the fact that we're concentrating on the Circle District as only learning things that will apply to there. And it's like everything else you go through, you know, you do the first one, and then you learn a lot that will help you on the other one. And my firm belief is that these things will become fairly routine, and that a lot we learn after we do two or three of them will apply statewide, so that we can sort of move to these areas with a heck of a lot less trouble we're talking about here.
Obviously, there are some things that can be applied statewide, but you're still going to have to go in and inventory those rivers. For example, the arsenic is, you know, classify those rivers. So that has to be done, whether you do it, you know, here or up there. It has to be done. You can't put that statewide.
The kind of thing I'm talking about, though, is if we determine that, yes, this type of arsenic and this level of arsenic is not a problem in a stream under these circumstances, then for the next area, perhaps all we've got to do is say, does this stream meet this criteria? And if it does, then it's automatically out, and that would be a relatively easy determination to make. And I'm hoping that out of this comes...
Seems to me there's other factors coming into it also. Fish and wildlife, those things are different in those different areas. So it seems to me that the in-depth study is going to have to be done in those areas too if you're going to come up with a reasonable system that they can work on in both areas.
I think a part of what makes that more realistic than it would sound on a this type of discussion is sort of the point that Senator Sturzelewski touched on, which is that the state is doing, and the federal government too, fairly comprehensive planning statewide. And a lot of these areas have got a lot of these questions. The information is sort of already laid out by some of it.
Maybe I'm just just a little bit gun-shy, but those of us who live in the Southeast are aware of applying general rules across the country as relates to those types of problems, and that could happen in Alaska, too.
Senator, I'm sorry I've been ignoring you. You're so quiet, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Well, I, since we're drawing to a close, and if I'm correct in that supposition, perhaps I should dispel what may be an erroneous impression. Ron, I direct this to you, sir. Senator Framingham said something very nice about the EPA, which is unheard of for her, but I'm glad she said it. However, I'd like you to know that Senator Eliason has the pulp mill in Sitka. This is non-germane, of course. And I have one in Ketchikan, and we aren't very fond of the EPA at all.
I'm not surprised.
We all have our problems throughout the state, believe me.
Commissioner Bay was just talking yesterday about, you know, this is a major problem, but we do have one or two others in the state, and that's the way
right.
to go. Let's get to the grants thing, if we could, then, because our time is getting very short. It was the feeling, I know, of this group as we considered the gold recovery, the use of water, that some of the best expertise concerning that was in the field itself. And in order to try to get some of those people who have ideas, the capabilities of producing the equipment by which to cut that use of water or to raise the recovery goal, we might be able to find some of the answers to our best practical technology, and we couldn't, some of them couldn't afford to do it by themselves. So Randy, would you bring us update where we are? Why are we where we are? Why are we not where we're not, or something?
Senator, in your letters of invitation to this hearing, you asked four questions about the grants, and I'll try to answer those as quickly as possible. You asked where would we start, and what's sort of the history of it? What do you see as the projection of it? How many applications have we awarded? And one other one that I'll think of in a second. And who applied? And the history of it is pretty simple. The governor came up and signed the bill on June 22nd. It went into effect on the 1st of July. On July 24th, the DNR and DEC had promulgated emergency regulations to offer about a third of this money, hoping that it could be used this mining season so that we can get information so that we can make better effluent guidelines and national permits and things like that. We knew we'd get in trouble if we tried to hurry up and do that. People said it was too much of a rush, nobody got the word out, and we got a lot of criticism for it, but we worked real hard to get it out. We essentially got 15 applications. I have a summary of those here, and I've neglected to make copies for you, but I will make copies later. This is the names and descriptions of the 15 people who applied. Of those 15, one person, and by the way, they were remarkably good applications in some senses, and we learned a little bit by going through this process. There were several good ideas, and it's really fun to read these applications because these people are enthusiastic about their ideas, and that's worth a lot to me already. Anyhow, they did come up with some good ideas. There were some wild ones too, and that was just reading the applications is a good. It's a good experience. I can get copies, I guess. Noel, I have to think about that. of the 15 applications we received, one fellow proposed to do something this summer. And we discussed that with him in detail. The rest of them proposed to start building things and welding this winter. We appointed after consultation with people, we tried to appoint a review committee. The way the legislation was drafted, there were three people to be appointed by the governor, two with experience in placer mining. And after we thought we had three rounded up, one fellow had to back out unexpectedly, which was very unfortunate, a very, very qualified person. We're in the process of finding a replacement. We've discussed it, and I think the commissioner wants to get a nominee in right away so we can have a full review committee to look at these applications.
Just happen to have some people in mind.
Yes, we have some people in mind. once the review committee gets together, I hope that they can have a meeting in early October, and then we'll start making final regulations. The emergency regulations will expire. We would like to use those as a model. The emergency regulations were not perfect. We have to change some things in it. We'll be going out to notice on what those changes are. Next week, midweek, we will meet with DNR and some of the local folks here to draft the amendments to the emergency regulations that we will eventually call final regulations. Final regulations, by hustling through the process pretty diligently, we hope we can get permanent regulations effective by the end of December. But remember that we'll have our notice out for what the regulations look like, what we expect in an application, what the minimum qualifications. Those things will be public in mid-October. So people will have plenty of notice to know how to apply, what's in an application, who's eligible, and questions like that. We hope that the review committee would only have to meet twice. And of course, that's up to them, but all I suggest is that they meet twice. One in early October, late October, as time allows, to sort of set the rules and make up the criteria from by which they review and make recommendations on these applications. And then we'd like to see them meet in early next year to review the applications and make the recommendations on it. We hope we can get money out on the final round of applications at least by early spring.
Those people who, in your applications, I haven't read any of them, of course, but if there are any of them who plan on building equipment during the winter, how does that early spring affect them? Does it knock them out for another year?
Now, this is the first difficult question that the review committee, who also involves the two commissioners who would eventually have to make the decisions on the regulations, the first difficult question by the review committee is what do we do with these 15 applications? Do we wait and lump them in to the final round of applications, or could we proceed and process them now? And there's, as you know, there would be arguments in favor of both points of view.
And I know there'll be arguments, but
I valid arguments.
I certainly hope that there won't be too much of an inclination to lump those into the last ones and just leave them off next year, because that's just one more way of delay. And we certainly don't need that. Anyway, that's my 2 cents worth. Does anybody want to add any more to that? Okay, you finished?
I hope so.
Randy, I want to thank you very much for your help.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you.
Does any member of the committee have a comment that you'd like to share with the public or question that you'd like to bring up before we close this up?
Manager, just very quickly, it's obvious that they're just finishing their field data and so on. Are you planning to have one more session, say, in just kind of thinking of scheduling prior to the new legislature? It just seems to me it would be useful because right now we have a group of people that are familiar and interested in this, and I'm wondering if maybe some of the people here can respond as to whether what they might have, say by November or early December, and if it might be useful to get us together again. I don't want to, you know, set your schedule for you.
Can anybody tell me where they'll be as far as this review of the materials, say by early November, early December, early January, early February? What are we looking at as a time frame?
Madam Chairman, as we mentioned in our talk several times, we're looking to early spring. March is the time when we're going to collect most of this data. As far as November,
we'll have some of the data analysis in November, but it'll just be the early part, and certainly not after the bonds and studies because of the
from that, then I judge that the Fish and Game is planning on doing all their own data analyses. They're not planning on using any?
With one exception, we are the analysis of the large polymer unit is being conducted by TGS and also it's being conducted by the private laboratory. And we do that for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons why we're on TGS with 2D samples. And the second reason
Anybody else want to respond, Randy?
Yes, Senator, I would respectfully suggest that if it were in the spring, we could do two things. We would have a better chance at getting the data lumped and thought over and digested. And secondly, we would also be able to give you a pretty good idea of what we intend to do as far as that field season's activities. And I think that way you could get what's coming and what's going at the same time.
We've got a wee problem. Early spring is pretty well after the legislature. Just a slight little reminder.
120 days plus 10.
Yeah, in terms of funding and moving on, it's well, Madam Chair, I think that I think the agencies here have to move ahead and get those bucks in the budget, and that's got to be part of your continuation, and to hope that you're enough on target so that's going to be adequate. I mean, there can always be adjustments in that budget process, but you better have the basics in there and not just come in then to request the secondary funding.
Senator, what date would you like?
What date would I like? You mean for completion?
I don't believe in meetings that are not productive. I love the collection of data, but I want to start to see it come together and know where we are. And if we can have a meeting that's going to help on that, fine. If not, then we need to wait until it can be done. But
you also indicated that the budget process...
The budget process, you need to get these figures in now in the governor's budget review, in my opinion, as to what you need to conduct the study as it's originally outlined. And then the kind of additional information that may come after you do your data and you find your gaps, I think, you know, can be handled. But I think that Senator Ziegler and Senator Farrington are right that when you reach the end of February, assuming we have the constitutional limit and it means something, you're getting to a point in time where it becomes, you know, has to fall into that end of the session stuff, and it gets very difficult. I think it's an important study.
Well, I have a question also. I think it sort of ties into this. What type of priority are you placing on this project? Each department, I suspect your department, of course, is very well interested in pursuing it. But is it high on your priority list? How about DNR?
I'm sorry, I was discussing with Randy how we should approach this and did not hear the question.
Obviously, you're going to be faced with a number of priorities when it comes time for the budget work. Where does this fit in that priority list?
I'm not sure we've got that stage in the budget process yet. I don't think so, but we are considering this program in our budget, and continuation is what we are looking at. But our budget hasn't got that far.
You wanted to respond to
that? The DGGS part of the Department of Natural Resources is concerned. I saw the increments that we have requested yesterday. And the classroom mining one is in the ones that will be recommended by the department.
That's the same position where we have it. It is an increment, not part of the base, and it is part of one of the increments that the commissioner will submit.
Well, sometimes, you know, the priority is not there when it comes from the departments. And legislators themselves are required to put it, and that's a hard way to go.
That's right.
We better get the support from the departments before we start talking about legislature putting a proposal in. Otherwise, it's going to be lost.
Yeah. Is anybody getting hungry?
Yeah.
I want to thank the agencies. I'm sorry. Well, I'm not either, so I'm not going to say that. I know I pushed you a little, but I think it was important for us to find out at this stage of the game where we were. How the funding was being used. We still did not get to enforcement. We still did not get to some of the nitty-gritty discussion that I'd hoped we'd be able to accomplish, but I'm going to be on the phone with you, and I'm sure other members of the committee will. Committee members, thank you for being here. I thank the miners that I see coming out. I'll be interested in your comments and yours, John. I'm sorry that we're not geared to be here too much longer. Hearing from the rest of the community. Is there someone that we've missed that just can't stand it if they don't get their 2 cents worth in today? Okay, if not, then...
tussock swamps out around Medicine Lake, and I don't think you can find the channel. So I think you'd better reassess the pictures that were shown of the sediment that collected down there. We'd have a gully washer, a good flood one of these days, and that'll all be cleaned out. I want to go back to the Clean Water Act. Whatever happened to the mandate in that act that the director shall conduct experiment and research to develop new techniques and methods to reduce or eliminate pollution caused from siltation? It's all in there, and the federal government has not done anything. I'm not chewing on you at all. I'm chewing on the federal government. We're having a little argument right now. But I think that mandate is there, and I think somebody better hold their feet to the fire. I appreciate what you've done to make some money available to some of these miners who will try to do some things, and I hope they're able to find out something. I don't know whether or not I agree with what's going on, because there is no way that you're going to make drinking water out of sluice box of wood. I guarantee you that. You can try as you will, but it's a physical impossibility, and if we do not get away from this 25 Jackson turbidity units that we were blackmailed into accepting by the federal government, threatening to cut off our water money for sewer and water projects, if we do not get away from that, you better write plaster binding off, and then you better repeal Section 8 of the Constitution of the State of Alaska about the development of our resources. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joe. Don, keep it very short, please.
Will be. We're spending in the state right now a tremendous amount of money on all these studies and everything else. Really, this is not necessary if EPA would simply implement the Clean Water Act the way it was intended. Section 304B states, or 304E, I believe, mining shall be regulated as a non-point source, and yet we in the plaster mining industry are being regulated as a point source, regardless of what the law says. Congress intended mining to be regulated as a non-point source. I don't care if they think it is a point source. That's what the law says. And that's the way we should be regulated. And a lot of this money and everything that we're spending is going down the drain as far as I'm concerned, because I think we should get back to the intent of Congress as far as the mining industry goes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Don. Anyone else? Then thank you all for being here. Meeting's adjourned.